Okay, Tov, and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. We are now beginning the study of the 10th parak of Masechet Ketubot and Daf Tzadi Amud Aleph in the middle of the Amud and Mishnah Aleph, which we will cover with its attendant Gemara in this Shiur, is relatively short and deals with an issue which will be more fully developed later on in the parak, which is the issue of multiple Ba'alecho, multiple creditors who come to claim from one estate and preference and to whom preference is given. We begin with the issue of somebody who has two wives. Mishayana suishte nashim umet. It's a very simple case. A man was married to two wives. He dies. Both wives come to collect the ktubah. Harishona kodemet lashnia. So the first wife is kodemet. We'll see what kodemet means. Has some sort of priority or preference to the second wife, meaning the later wife, the one married later. This is also true about the heirs of the wife. And of course, we are dealing here with the issue of Ktubat Banim Dichrin, which will be a major focus of our sugya. And that is to remind you from the fourth parak, that the wife's property that she brings in and the Ktubah are all divided only among the children that she has with the husband and not with his other children. And so therefore there are two groups of heirs who first of all want to claim their own mother's portion, and then from whatever's left to divide it is in the normal Yerusha. The heirs of the first wife have the first claim. Now, second clause gets a little more confusing. Nasata Rishana Umeta. He married two women. The first wife died. Nasa Shnia, he then married a second wife, Umeitu, and then he died. Shnia v'yoshea could mean liyoshe rishona. Here the result is reversed, that the heirs of the second wife have the earlier claim on the property before the heirs of the first wife. Because the first wife predeceased him, he immediately inherited everything that she has. When he died, then the first group to come is the group of the heirs of the wife who died afterwards, and perhaps that means that they are the only ones who have Ktubat Banim Dichrin. We will see that in the Gemara. Now, Midiktanya Rishana Kodem Lashnia, the Gemara infers from the first line in the Mishnah, since it says the first wife has priority over the second one, Veloktanya Rishana Yishla Vashnia Inla, didn't say that the first wife has a ktubah and the second one does not get an inheritance. We can infer from there that it is simply priority given to the first wife, but if the second wife goes ahead and grabs assets to cover the debt owed to her, and thus deprives the Rishona of getting her claim, that we allow her to keep it. This seems to come down on the side of a problematic issue, which is when you have two Baalei Chov, and one is later than the other, and there's not enough property for both of them, obviously the earlier Baal Chov has the claim. But it seems from here that if the later Baal Chov grabs the assets, we can't take it away from him. All right, so we don't like making that conclusion, drawing that conclusion from our Mishnah. The Olam Melacha Mashukava Lo Gava. Actually, I could come to the opposite conclusion, which is that if the second Baal Chov claims something, we take it away from him. Umay Kodemet. So why does our Mishnah just use the word Kodemet, has priority, as if to say, ideally she goes first? The answer is Legamri Ktani. Kodemet here means totally, meaning she comes first, and the other one, if there's not enough property, doesn't collect anything. Kedinan, as we have a Mishnah in Baba Batra regarding Yerusha, Ben Kodem Labat. What does Ben Kodem Labat mean? Means that when there is a son and a daughter, the son inherits, the daughter does not inherit. The reason it says kodem mabat is if there is no ben, then the daughter's next. But it's not as if she's next after the son, she's next if there is no son. And so in this case, the son has the total Yerusha. Same thing here, the first one is kodemet, meaning the shniyah has no claim, and if she does grab it, it has to give it back. That's way one. Way two is ikadamri. The argument to Salentio, the fact that the Mishnah did not stipulate that if the second one grabs, we allow her to keep it, that should lead us to the opposite conclusion, that if she did grab it, we take it away from her. The Rishona has the claim. So that will lead us to the opposite conclusion about the general question of a later Baal Chov grabbing and depriving the earlier Baal Chov of his due collection. No, Le'olamim, again, we cannot draw that conclusion. Le'olamim elachama shegava, gava. I could argue that if the second one collects, he gets to keep it. And so why does our Mishnah not say that if the Shnia grabs it, she gets to keep it? Ayatana Shnia v'yasher could mean Le'yasher v'shana, since the latter clause in the Mishnah, which needs to be this way, is that the heirs of the first wife have the claim before, meaning they have precedence over the claim of the heirs of the second wife. Therefore, the Reisha also says Tananami Harishana Kodemet Lashnia. Therefore, it also says Harishana Kodemet Lashnia. But really, the implication is that if the Shnia grabs it, she would indeed be able to keep it. Okay, Nasata Rishona. Now we're going to look at the second half of the Mishnah, which is a little bit more confusing, where he marries a woman, she dies, he marries a second one, he dies. We say that only the heirs of the second wife have this claim. Now, Shema Minatlat, immediately we draw three conclusions about thorny issues from this statement. One is, Shema Minah, Achat b'chayav, Achat b'moto. When you have two wives, and one dies while you're alive, and the other one after you die, Yesh lahen ketubat banim dichrin. Ketubat banim dichrin is still active. It still works, and both groups get to, sets of heirs get to claim the part that was their mother's ketubah and take that only among themselves and then divide the rest. V'lo chashinan l'insuye. We're not concerned about squabbling. In other words, it works as follows. In a normal case of banim dichrin, when a man marries several wives, he dies, and then all of their heirs come, and they're all coming with the same level of interest, which is we're going to start with Ketubat Banim Dichrin from the estate, and then afterwards there will be an issue of Yerusha. So they understand that one mother had a larger Ketubah and larger Nichsimilog, the other one had a smaller one. But here it's uneven, because the heirs of the second wife are coming as Ketubat Banim Dichrin. The heirs of the first wife are coming simply as regular heirs, so there'll be squabbling. So our inference here is that nonetheless we have Banim Dichrin, and we're not concerned about that squabbling. Now, how do we know that? In the second half of the Mishnah, we said that the second wife and her heirs come before the heirs of the first wife. What does it mean they come before? Mikdam hu dekadmi. It means they have preference, precedence. Ha'ika shakli. But well, that the implication is that if there's enough assets to go around, everybody gets it, which means barim dichrin gets given to the heirs of the second wife, to the heirs of the first wife. If there's not enough, we start with the second wife. So that's implication number one. Ushma mina. Inference number two. Ketubah en aset motar l'chaverta. This is a principle that we've seen a little bit, and we're going to see further fleshed out later on our perek, which is that ketubat banim dichrin can only be activated, we saw this mentioned in the fourth perek, if it will not usurp ketubat ne yerusha d'oraita. Remember, mi d'oraita, there has to be a yerusha given to the family, to the heirs. The minimum that we say is a dinar. So if, after dividing up the ketubat banim dichrin, there is not a dinar left, then we don't do banim dichrin at all, and everything becomes a regular yerusha. However, the implication from our ruling is that if one ketubah is a motar dinar, is a dinar, that becomes the motar dinar for the ketubat banim dichrin on the other side. How do we know that? Midaloktani im yesha motar dinar. Because the Mishnah did not say, if there's a motar dinar, then the Shnia get banim dichrin. Remember, the group of the second heirs are picking up the banim dichrin. Now, if the Mishnah did not stipulate that there has to be a dinar left over besides all of the stuff that they're discussing, and the regular Yerusha doesn't say that. So the implication is that the ketubah of the first wife itself can become the dinar for the second heir's collection. All right, and Ushmamina, what's the third conclusion? Ketubat banim dichrin los tarfa mimshabdim. That the ketubat banim dichrin cannot be collected from mishubadim. It can only be collected from stuff that is in the control of the father when he dies. The isal kadaitin tarfa mimshabdim, because if you think they could, watch this trick. Leitu b'nei rishona, after the heirs of the second wife collect their banim dichrin, then the heirs of the first wife could come along and say, "V'litrafinu legat levnei shnia." They could come and collect it from the heirs of the second wife and say, "Good, we are collecting our ketubat banim dichrin." Because we've already said they both have banim dichrin, we're collecting ketubah banim dichrin from stuff that's mishuabad, which is the stuff that you collected as yerusha, and we're collecting it. So obviously, it means that you cannot collect it from mishuabad, and that's why they can't come and make that claim. Those are the three conclusions. Matkif Rav Asher. Rashi challenges the first two. Mimai, who says, first of all, that Barim Dichrin exists when one wife predeceased the husband and the other one died afterwards? Maybe in such a case there isn't. Umai Kodmin, so why does the Mishnah say Kodmin, that the heirs of the second are Kodmin to the heirs of the first? Lanachalaktani, it means they come first as far as Yerusha goes, but not as far as Barim Dichrin. They don't have Barim Dichrin, the first group. V'chi teima yoshe harishon alamali. So then, why am I mentioning the heirs of the first wife? That's always a Barim Dichrin concept. So the answer is, it's again parallel construction, because in discussing the second wife and her heirs, so we mentioned the heirs of the first, but really the heirs of the first are coming as regular Yorshim, not as Barim Dichrin. That's Rav Ashi's challenge to the first conclusion. And your other conclusion, which was that the ketubah of one can become the motar for the other banim dichrin. Perhaps I can come to the conclusion that a ketubah cannot be considered motar dinar, and you need an extra dinar that's not tied up with a ketubah to make the Yerusha happen and then allow banim dichrin to kick in. Motar dinar, and maybe in our case there was a motar dinar. Okay, so that's Rav Ashi's challenge to both to the first two conclusions. Now, going back to the first conclusion, the reality is, we think that the issue of whether in the case where one wife predeceases and the other one dies afterwards, where the Barim Dichrin applies to both wives, I mean both sets of Yorshim, is a machloka tanaim, we think. Titanya, we have a braita, metu achat b'chayav achat b'moto, you have that case. Ben Nana somer, what does Ben Nana say? Yecholin b'nei harishona lomar livnei hashniya, b'nei v'alat chovatem. The kids of the first wife, meaning the wife who predeceased, can say to the kids of the second wife, who died after the husband died, they say, your mother was a ba'alat chov. Take your mother's ketubah, meaning the banim dichrin section, and leave, implying that the first and the second both have banim dichrin. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Kfar Kafzana Chalam Lefnei Bnei Harishona V'Nafal Lefnei Bnei Hashniya. Rabbi Kiva disagrees and says that the minute that the first one predeceased the husband, their nachala already left her and went to the domain of the second one. When the husband died, it all fell to her, which means the first group is cut out. Sounds like Banana says Achat Machaya V'Achat Moto, both have banim dichrin, and Rabbi Kiva says no, only the one who died afterwards has banim dichrin. Now, my love, Bahakami Paul Gidamar Savachat Bachayab Achat Moto, Yeshlang Tubat Barim Dichrin, or Savachat Bachayab Achat Moto. Ein Lang Tubat Barim Dichrin, is that not the machloket here? So, we'll see that it's not. Amar Rabba. So Rabba says the following. Ashukachatinu Rabbanim Deve Rav. I saw the students of Rav, of Rav Yeshiva, the Atvi Vikamri, that they were sitting and they said the following, commenting on this, the Breita. Both Ben Nanas and Mekiva agree that both wives and the families have Banim Dichrin, even if one predeceased. What they're really disagreeing about is if the Ketubah can become the Motar Dinar for the other ones. In other words, Rabbi Akiva says that because there is not a Motar Dinar out there, therefore, we cannot generate Banim Dichrin. And Banana says that there is, that the Ketubah is enough to generate Banim Dichrin, and parenthetically, they say the same thing about a Baal Chov, meaning, let's say that the only amount that's left over beyond the Banim Dichrin is a dinar that's owed to somebody. And therefore, if it's owed to somebody, just like here it's owed with the Yerusha, therefore, it does or does not constitute a Motar Dinar that allows us to generate and activate Banim Dichrin. Now, Mar Savar Ketubah Naseit Motar L'Chavertav U'Adin L'Baal Chov, that is Benanas. Mar Savar Ain Ketubah Naseit Motar L'Chavertav U'Adin L'Baal Chov, and they would make it equal it. Now, Rabba said that's what they said. V'Yamina L'Huanan Ana, and then Rabba said, and what I told them was, Baal Chov Kuli Amalo Pligid Havim Motar. In the case of Baal Chov, everybody agrees that if there is money that the estate owes somebody, that is Motar Dinar. Why? Because all of the heirs have an equal responsibility towards it. It's not divided among the sons of the different mothers. Ki pligi b'ktubah, their machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Benanas, is if the ktubah, which of course belongs only to one subset of the family, if that could be the Motar Dinar. Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't, Benanas says that it does. Now, Matkif to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef doesn't like this explanation at all. Rabba tells a story that he said, I heard the students of Rav saying this. I corrected them slightly. Rav Yosef says, I don't buy the whole thing. So why was Rabbi Akiva's response to Ben Anas that the Nachala has jumped from the domain of the first wife to the second? He should have just turned around and said, if there is a motar dinar, then they keep it and they both get to have it. If you say that everybody agrees that achat b'chayev achat moto gets ktubat panim dichrin, the only problem is there enough to generate panim dichrin? That's what Rabbi Akiva should have said. El Amar Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef comes with a different explanation, back to where we started, b'achat b'chayev achat moto kamipalgi. They really are disagreeing about our first point. V'tani hani tanai ka hani tanai. Rabbi Akiva bananas parallel this machloket, detanya, nasata rishona umeta. Again, the same case. Nasata shnia umetu. He married a woman, she died. He married a second woman, he died. The second heirs come and collect the ktuba of their mother. That's Tanakama. Rabbi Shimon says, if there is a motar dinar around, then each group gets to collect. Right? If not, then nobody collects special. They just divide the entire estate equally. There's no banim dichrin. Now, my love, b'hakami palgi demar sav achat b'chayav achat moto yishling tubat banim dichrin, because this is a case of achat b'chayav achat moto. So isn't it the case that Rabbi Shimon says there is banim dichrin, and the chachamim say not? Mar sav achat b'chayav achat moto ein lehem kudubat banim dichrin, only the heirs of the wife who outlived the husband. Lo, the chuliyam achat b'chayav achat moto yishling tubat banim dichrin. We're going back again to where we started, that everybody agrees that if one predeceased and one outlived the husband, they both have barim dichrin. V'hacha b'dinar b'karki mikami palgi. Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim are disagreeing about something else, which is, do you have to have the motar dinar be part of land, or can it be metaltalin? Mar sabar mikarki in, metaltali lo. Chacham say, if there isn't enough karka to be called motar dinar, then you don't do barim dichrin. Umar sabar afilu metaltali. And Rabbi Shimon says metaltalin will work. How can you possibly say that? Vatanan, Rabbi Shimon himself says, Afilu yesh sham nechasim she'en lamachrayut, en an klum. Even if you have lots of stuff that isn't metaltalin, it doesn't help. Ad she'esh sham nechasim she'estan achrayut, eter al shteik tubot dinar. And it's later on in our parak. We're going to see that Rabbi Shimon says that you cannot do this division unless there is a surplus above the value of both tubot of a dinar of land. So Rabbi Shimon cannot be an authority who says that metaltalin count for motar dinar. Elas, so we try a different tack. Keep that one in mind. We'll come back to it. Hacha b'dinar meshabdi kimpalgi. They're disagreeing if the motar dinar is meshuabad to somebody. It's not free and clear. Mar sabar nechorin in meshabdi lo. The Tanakama says that you will only call it a motar dinar if it is free and clear. Umar sabar afilu meshabdi. Rabbi Shimon says no, even if it's meshubad. Yachar b'Shimon omer im yesha motar dinar. Kevin sheyesha motar dinar b'alei. He shouldn't have said if there's a motar dinar. He should have just said since there's a motar dinar, they both collect. In other words, if they're arguing about a case where there's a motar dinar but it's meshubad, Rabbi Shimon should use the wording since there's a motar dinar, they collect, not if there is. They're really disagreeing about whether motar dinar is an example or is really a base minimum. Mar savar dinar in pachot midinar lo. Chachamim say that it has to be a dinar and not less. Umar savar afilu pachot midinar. Rabbi Shimon says even if there's less than a dinar, as long as there's some significant amount above and beyond the ktubot, then you can generate it. Rabbi Shimon dinar kamar. Rabbi Shimon said the word dinar. You can't say that he said dinar but he didn't mean it. So you want to switch them and say Rabbi Shimon is the one who said who meant that it has to be a dinar. Chachamim said it can be less. In that Mishnah, the Tanakama also says dinar. Nobody could hold less than a dinar. We can't entertain the possibility that someone holds that a dinar is lav davka and it could be less. So we have to go back to our first two answers. First one being the discussion is whether it has to be from karka, and the second one is whether or not it has to be b'nei chorin. But we're going to flip it, meaning that it's Rabbi Shimon who is the one who says that it takes the more narrow view, if you will. It says it absolutely has to be karka, and it absolutely has to be b'nei chorin. And Chacham say that if there's a motar dinar there of any sort, meaning even if it's a shuabad, even if it's a taltalin, one or those other, then they would say that you can both ktubot can be collected. Good. Amar Marzutra Mishmeder Papa. Hilchata, here's the ruling. Achat b'chayav, achat moto, yishling ktubat panim dichrin. You knew this was coming, because we saw it throughout the sugya. We keep pushing the point that everybody agrees that that if you have these two wives, one predeceased, etc., that they're still banim dichrin. And the one ketubah can become the motar dinar for the other one. Now, the question is, why did Rav Pap have to phrase this? I understand if he gave me the first ruling. If he gave me the first ruling, I wouldn't know the second ruling. I would think, of course, you have to have a full, clear motar dinar that's not connected to any ketubah to generate this. That I would think. Why don't you just teach me the second law? Because if you teach me the second law, that ketubah itself can become the motar dinar for the other one, that's because both families have banim dichrin, even though one predeceased the husband. So from the second ruling, I know the first ruling. Why didn't you mention both? So the answer is, if I only mentioned the second ruling, that the motar dinar, Haviamena, I would have thought, kigon shenasah shalosh nashim. I would think that was talking about a case where he has three wives. Umeitu shtai mechayav, two predeceased him. V'achat moto, one, he predeceased the third. V'achtamai lachamita, and the one who outlived him, yoledet nekevahi, was one who only had a daughter. V'lav bat yerushahi, therefore she doesn't get her yerusha because they're sons from the other two wives. And therefore, in that case, I would think, aha, that ketubah becomes motar dinar for the other two, that they can have banim dichrin. Aval achat b'chayav achat moto, but I would not know if one of them predeceased and the other one outlived him, and they both have sons. I wouldn't know that banim dichrin applies to both families. Mitavi lo zachari, ema leichush l'nisuyah. I might be concerned that these two families of boys who are heirs are going to fight about this issue. Kamash malan. That's why I need the ruling also that achat b'chayav v'achat b'moto. There is ketubah banim dichrin. Okay, we will pick up Yemirtz Hashem in the next podcast. Actually, the next podcast will be a makeup from part of our gap in Perek Shishi. But subsequently, we will pick up on the Mishnah and Daf Tzadi Aleph. Everybody should have a wonderful day.